Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi everyone, it's Harry here. I'm just walking my dog. It's a lovely day and I'm just here to tell you about our new sponsor, Manscaped, the best in the business of helping you care for your family jewels. I'll be back with more info halfway through the show, so enjoy it.
The transfer window. One club with an enormous transfer kitty are opening low-level talks amid great speculation for a Spanish ace dub. The new Wes Brown, who could command a $72.4 million fee, and elsewhere another manager is keeping tight-lipped over his transfer priorities, but he's known to be keeping tabs on a certain Portuguese star. Are these real? No, but they could be. It's transfer season, although a slightly strange one at that, and this is the language of the transfer window most accurately documented by the great Football Clichés Twitter account. Welcome to the Manchester United Weekly Podcast once again, as we are talking transfers. What position should United be looking at? Who should the club sign? Who should the club sell? And how do all of those processes work? And yes, we'll talk about, whisper it quietly, Jadon Sancho. We've held back on all of these themes throughout the season because, to be honest, there's no point constantly talking about hypotheticals. But once a year, or once a transfer window, twice a year, it's the right time to get stuck in and delve into it all. Thanks for listening. As always, this episode of the Manchester United Weekly Podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, the very best in men's below-the-belt grooming. More on that later. But now, Jack, we better get stuck in. Let's get some quick-fire stuff out of the way to begin. First of all, which positions do United need to strengthen in?
I think more than anything, right wing, centre-back, central midfield are the three priorities. And I would say, in terms of non-starters, potentially a backup striker, and a backup or starting left back.
I think I'd agree on those. I think right wing and centre back and centre mid are definitely the three priorities. And I think left back's an interesting one because Shaw's been in good form and Williams is a potential good one. Right back, United have Ethan Laird coming up behind Wan-Bissaka. But the striker one's interesting because you've got Ighalo until January, so maybe that will be put on the back burner. But yeah, three priorities: right wing, centre back, and centre mid.
To be honest, it feels like they've been the priorities for the last 4 years as well.
Yeah.
And we just never have like fully fixed them.
Yeah.
I think in terms of the backup strikers, you're right about Ighalo staying until January. And honestly, for now, on a sort of short-term basis, it may also pay for us to look into getting another backup winger as well, even if we do end up signing a starting right wing, because we still really only have Rashford, Greenwood and Martial as sort of our frontline wingers. And the drop after that is significant, to say the least, going down to Dan James or Juan Mata or Andreas Pereira.
Yeah.
So which player, Harry, if any, do you think is the priority for United this summer?
I think Sancho's the obvious one. Although I think the speculation around Sancho has been there for so long that it kind of feels, it just feels strange. I think Sancho is the priority for United from the people working at United. As fans, yeah, I think he's got to be the priority as well. He'd be great to watch. He'd be a massive improvement on that right wing. And as you say, we haven't had a right wing for basically a decade, or probably 7 years since Antonio Valencia was at his peak before Sir Alex Ferguson retired. So yeah, Sancho.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue with Sancho. The signing, it would have everything. It would have someone young, exciting, on the rise, who you would expect to improve a lot at United, who could come in and start straight away, and has the added bonus of sticking it to to our noisy neighbours as well, having through the City Academy and then potentially ending up at United.
Yeah.
I think if I was going to say anyone other than Sancho, we haven't necessarily been linked to this player that much. I think maybe Kalidou Koulibaly, centre-back, Senegalese centre-back, I think would be a great addition for United, an absolute rock at the back for Napoli. And I think would provide us with, you know, some really, really good solidity at the back. As I said, we haven't really been linked to him that much, but he's a centre-back that I very much enjoy watching and would love to have at United.
Yeah, it's one of those...
And I think it's been one of the quirks of the way that the season has ended. But there actually haven't been that many transfer rumours involving United other than Sancho, which is not normal for this time of year.
Well, I also think it's one of those where we're in a... The way the transfer market is right now, the only position where there is one player who is quite clearly the best fit for United is the right wing, and that's Jadon Sancho. Whereas you look, United need a midfielder, but is there one standout player that they need to sign? No. Is there one standout centre-back that they need to sign? No, the same is true there. We're going to talk, obviously, in more detail about Sancho, about different signings, but last quickfire question. Which players should United sell this summer, Jack?
I think, off the top of my head, I'd go with Lingard, Phil Jones... and then Sanchez, Alexis Sanchez and Marcus Rojo on permanent deals have obviously both been out on loan this season. I mean, we've done a good job over the last 12 months clearing out a lot of the deadwood that we had in our squad, and I think this would pretty much clear the remaining deadwood that we have.
Yeah, I agree. I think for me the instant ones are Jones and Rojo and Sanchez, and that's a big weight off the wage budget and frees up a whole load of, I mean, Sanchez by himself, but Jones and Rojo aren't on small wages. I think it's time for Lingard to move on, but he's not. If he did stick around for another year, if he was going to play 5 or 10 games, then fine. He's not my number one priority to kind of get rid of, whereas Sanchez, Rojo and Jones, it's like, right, we need to get rid of these now. And I think Diogo Dalot is another one. A obviously talented young player, but hasn't had that many chances at United, but he's also never, I don't think, going to be United's first choice.
No.
He's certainly not a priority to get rid of, but given the current financial situation, it may make sense to sell him, get a bit of extra transfer budget, a bit of extra wage budget, and then you've got Ethan Laird coming behind Aaron Wan-Bissaka in that right back position anyway. But he's obviously a great squad option. But if United need some money, then Diogo Dalot is one you could sell.
I think with both Dalot and Lingard, it may honestly come down to what's best for the players. So I think, especially in terms of Lingard, I don't hate the idea of keeping him for another year, to be honest. But part of my desire to sell him is actually for his own benefit. You know, as much as he has been frustrating at times, he's been a great servant to the club. And I think we, as fans, I personally would like to see him go and, you know, fulfil his career and have, you know, these should be his prime years, and he's wasting them on our bench. And I think, you know, moving to a club where he would get regular game time might be what's best for him. But I think, honestly, it's one of those situations where he probably has enough credit in the bank with the club to kind of dictate whether we actively look to sell him or whether we try and keep him for another year.
Yeah. Right, let's move on to Jadon Sancho. We're at the stage of the transfer window where, as United fans, every year we tend to be looking across jealously at our rival City. Have signed Ferran Torres on the cheap from Valencia, a great player, ridiculously low fee, and that's all done. Nathan Ake looks like he'll be following soon from relegated Bournemouth. Chelsea have signed Hakim Ziyech and Timo Werner, two very good players at two very reasonable fees as well. Beyond that, to be fair, it's all speculation. Liverpool are linked with Thiago, but don't seem to have a huge amount of money. Arsenal, let's not bother there. But the philosophy I'm taking this year is that I'm not too bothered until the end of the transfer window. Of all years, this is a very strange one. Any players signed can't play in this mini Europa League competition. And so my only concern is whether they're ready to play in mid-September for the start of the Premier League season. And with that attitude, I think I'm much more relaxed about the whole process. I don't need to be following Twitter and replying to every single tweet saying, any Sancho news?
I think the other reason why we have to be patient this summer is, and try not to get too worked up about, you know, transfer rumours and how things seem to be going, is because potentially for the first time ever, and certainly for the first time in a number of years, we genuinely have absolutely no idea how much United or other clubs have to spend. You know, COVID-19 hasn't just delayed the season, but it's destroyed revenue streams for every club around the world. How is that going to affect transfers? Yeah. Does that give United an advantage? Because, you know, we're a big enough and wealthy enough club to be able to withstand this better than most, and therefore are still able to go and spend while others say Liverpool, Arsenal aren't able to go and spend? Or are we feeling the consequences of this just as much as everyone else? We honestly just don't know how it's going to affect everything. The one thing that you might see is sort of a resetting of the transfer market, which had just ballooned to, I mean, quite astronomical figures in the last few years. And potentially this will mean that clubs both have less money to spend and are also willing to accept less money for certain players because they're just so desperate to have any sort of revenue coming in. But we just don't know how this is going to happen. I think it's going to be so much harder to predict because even if this transfer window goes according to plan, I don't expect United to be throwing around 150, 200 million pounds.
Yeah, I think it's very different. And I think United probably are in a very good position compared to most clubs. But the real question is, are selling clubs, and I'm going to talk about this a bit later with Borussia Dortmund, but are selling clubs going to think this isn't the summer we're going to sell our best player? We're going to hold on to him for a year. Even if he wants to leave, we'll hold on to him for a year. And next year we'll get a much better transfer fee for him when things have slightly recovered. And that's there's so many interesting dynamics to this transfer window. And that is certainly one of them. Let's talk Jadon Sancho. The latest on him and United is Dortmund are telling German media that they won't sell him for less than 110 million, with 100 million of that up front straight away. But that's what they're telling their media. United, meanwhile, are telling the English media that they won't pay that much up front and they think that they can get him for less money. Daniel Harris, who's been on the podcast a couple of times, claims that United could sign Sancho for 60 million euros up front and a further 60 million in a mixture of installments and add-ons over the next few years. And the German reports also say that Dortmund want the deal done by August the 10th. So what's really going on is an absolute massive game of public poker in the press. And of course, Manchester United are involved, as they always are, much to the frustration of our fan base. My advice would be forget about it until it all really matters. But I think the questions we have to ask with Sancho, because there's one question we clearly don't have to answer or ask, and that is Jadon Sancho good enough for United? He is. Is he a great player? He is. But we do have to ask, in the current climate, is he worth the money that he will cost, 100 million euros or more? And also, how important would he be as a world-class right winger for United, a team that has lacked a great right winger for many, many years now?
I'll answer the second question first. And how important would he be? I mean, I think it's hard to describe how important he'd be, to be honest. We've lacked a right winger for, as we said before, the best part of a decade, really, since Valencia played there.
Yeah.
And we've just never had anyone who looked comfortable on that right flank. When we've tried so many times to play Rashford or Martial there, it just hasn't worked. They don't look comfortable. They don't look at their best. Despite how well Mason Greenwood played there in the last few weeks of the season, I don't see right wing as where his future lies. I see it more as a central striker. And although I think it's good for him to play there, we still need a frontline right winger. And Jadon Sancho, I mean, the talent is undoubted. His goals and assist numbers in the Bundesliga in the last couple of years have been just, I mean, ridiculous, really, for any player, let alone, what is it, 21-year-old. And I think, honestly, we need to do all we can to get him in. And I think this comes now to whether he's worth the money. I think a big part of that equation is how many years are you going to get out of Jadon Sancho? You know, it's not like we're signing a player who's 27, 28 in their prime. Say like the Robin Van Persie signing, to give one example, who you might get 3 or 4 years out of at best. You know, if obviously there's so many ifs and buts. It depends if the signing works and Sancho comes in, stays healthy, whatever. But, you know, best case scenario, you're potentially looking at 10, 12 years of Jadon Sancho's best. Yeah. And for me, I think that is very, very much worth potentially up to 110 million pounds. Although in the current market, I don't think it's going to take that much. I think we could probably get him for less.
Yeah. I think what's incredible about Sancho is I was doing some notes for this episode and I thought, just thinking, how much is he worth to United? And it's obviously a lot. There's no question about that. But then you just remind yourself, he's 20 years old. That is, I mean, he's already established as one of the best players in the world. And I don't think there's any argument with that. And he's 20. So we can argue about how important he'd be on the right wing, how much he'd improve United. But the the real thing as a fan, he'd be so good to watch. And he'd make United a really, it's already an exciting front line. And he'd just exaggerate that even more. He's a great player. He's a likeable figure. And there's all of these other factors, like the fact that he'd count as a homegrown player in the Champions League, like the fact that he's mates with Rashford and from the England squad and Lingard as well and other players from the England squad. All of these things, his great stats and whatever, but he would just be a brilliant player to watch. I think everyone just believes that he would fit in at United. And so for when you're talking about a 20-year-old, you're thinking, well, kind of just pay whatever you need to. Now, obviously, the problem is United have to think, it depends how much United's budget is. Because if United have a budget of, let's say, 130, 140 million, which is very possible given the current situation and climate, then you're thinking, well, if we sign Sancho, then that's almost it. You could probably sign Sancho and one other decent player. So there's obviously that consideration. But you also think, and I think this is a really important one, is United don't have any competition this summer. Barca and Real Madrid's finances, to put it mildly, are fucked because of the recent going-ons in the world. If they weren't already, Barca were already in trouble. Bayern Munich will never pay that much for a player. Juventus have never been linked with Jadon Sancho. I don't think he'd go and play there. I don't think, to be honest, that they are ever going to be in for him. We could be proved wrong in the next month. Who knows? But United seemingly have no competition. Chelsea have got the attackers they want. City don't look like they're ever going to go in and sign Sancho. Liverpool, well, possibly, but it seems like their finances aren't good enough. Whereas if United wait a year, then suddenly you've got all these clubs coming back to the table. So there's so much going on with this possible transfer. It's hard to sum it all up, but there's so much happening.
Well, and the other thing as well is that, as you said, if signing Sancho was to take up basically all of our transfer budget, the consideration then from United has to be, is Sancho worth potentially not getting a new centre-back, not getting a new central midfielder this year? And that is a very tough decision to make, you know? I mean, I think more than ever now, this transfer window is a time for creativity and flexibility in the way that we get deals done, in terms of how much gets paid up front, how much gets paid in instalments. I mean, one scenario that I thought of that I wouldn't particularly like, because I think getting Sancho in now is the most important thing. But if a sticking point for Dortmund is, you know, having him for another season versus, you know, holding out for that 110 million, you know, we've seen clubs in the past, as Chelsea did with Pulisic at Dortmund, you know, buying the player, then loaning him straight back. And it feels like, whether with Sancho or anyone else, if this feels like the kind of summer where creative deals like that are going to be what's needed to work around, you know, some of these financial constraints that we have. And if that's the only way to get Dortmund to agree without letting this go on for another summer, and then, as you said, letting the likes of Barcelona and Real Madrid come through, if it would then allow Dortmund to accept, say, 60 million instead of 100 million up front, and then free up some money for us to get a player elsewhere, say a centre-back, you know, maybe that is an option that we could explore. I would much rather Sancho come in now, and I think that should be the priority. But it is a very hard decision for United to make. Is buying Sancho worth not buying any other players this summer?
Yeah, and look, United's finances are they're in pretty good condition. They haven't, I think I spoke about this on the podcast last time they released their results, which was March. They're not going up at the rate they used to, and other clubs are catching up. Nevertheless, United are still in a very good situation. So I wouldn't sign, and unless you're getting a massive price cut, I wouldn't sign Sancho and wait a year for him to come, just because I think United clearly won't have that much money. If you're then spending it on a player you're not getting for a year, especially when United's squad is currently, the squad's not starting 11, the squad is very weak, and there'll be some players leaving anyway, I don't think I could justify that. We got one question from Avik Sinha, from Bengaluru in India, who said, can you give a bit of insight into the process, what goes on in terms of the approach, these future payment clauses and people involved? Why do these deals take time, basically? I think the interesting thing is why are Borussia Dortmund holding out for so much? And it's basically because if you put yourself in the Dortmund perspective, they're asking themselves, what's the value of keeping Jadon Sancho for another year? So if we don't sell him now and sell him next summer for 30 million less, is that worth it? Because we'll have a better chance of winning the Bundesliga and the Champions League with him. So that's why the massive valuation of 110 million, 120 million is there, even though transfer fees have fallen elsewhere. Because if they think him being in the team for another year is worth 20, 30 million, then they may as well hold out for that. And that's also why they've got the deadline of August the 10th, apparently, in the German media. I think to be honest, that transfer is not going to be sorted by August the 10th, is it?
No, absolutely not. And I mean, these things take just so much time. There's so many things that have to go into it with, you know, not just deciding the total fee. It's about the add-ons, how you're going to distribute that money over a certain length of time. You know, one of the sticking points for Dortmund seems to be how much they're getting up front.
Yeah.
And as we said, that it's probably going to be a massive sticking point in a lot of transfers this summer, because clubs are desperate for revenue, but clubs are also desperate not to spend too much all at once at the moment.
Yeah.
And then you have to talk about agent fees and all that kind of stuff. There's so much that goes into a transfer, and it can take so long from even just agreeing the fee before you actually have everything signed away.
But the clubs are so desperate for cash as well. I noted down what United's finance is like, to answer Vic's question as well. So when a club sign a player, the accountants do a process called player amortization. So they calculate the cost of the player over the course of their contract. So every club does it at the top level. So that means the transfer fee, the agent fee, and the wages all together. And since most contracts are 5 years, that will be split over 5 years. So say Jadon Sancho comes in for 100 million euros. With wages of 50 million over 5 years, add on agent fees of 10 million, and you add that all up, that's 160 million euros. This isn't what the real cost would be, but anyway. So then you split that 160 million over 5 years, and on the accounting reports, it'd be 160 million divided by five. So 32 million a year for Jadon Sancho would be on United's kind of records. So when clubs are planning that, this is kind of what they're doing. They normally pay the fee in regular installments over a couple of years. But sometimes, as Dortmund seem to be doing, clubs will demand cash up front. For United, this might be a good thing over the summer, because they have a pretty large cash balance compared to other clubs. So I checked the last financial results released in March 2020. United had £90.3 million of cash balances and access to an extra £150 million in cash credit. So obviously that's also needed to respond to what's happened. The loss of television revenue, the loss of match day revenue, the loss of megastore, museum, all of these things that you don't necessarily think about. It's not just people going to games. It's also like these museums, megastore, people having less money to spend, etc. But United do have a lot of cash, so should be all right. But there is so much to consider. We should move on from Jadon Sancho and talk about other players. But Jack, do you think this deal is going to be done?
I was very optimistic a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
I think this August 10th deadline that Dortmund seems to have imposed, at least according to reports, and who knows if that really is true, complicates things a lot.
Yeah.
Because I think it gives us less time to, you know, get the price down in negotiations. I think at the end of the day, we will deem Sancho to be so important, and also from a sort of a PR standpoint as well, such a big deal, because he's been mooted as coming to United for so long, that I think it will get over the line.
Yeah, I think United will pay it in the end. And I think I've got no idea what the fee will be, but I think United will end up paying not too much less than what Dortmund are asking for. But I think it is important to try and get that fee down, especially in this climate. Hello everyone, it's me again on my walk. The sun's out and by the pond, and I'm here to tell you about our sponsor Manscaped, the best in men's below the belt grooming. They offer precision engineered tools for your family jewels, and they've just launched in the UK. They've created the greatest ball hair trimmer ever, and just released a new and improved Lawnmower 3.0 in the UK. It's got a cutting-edge ceramic blade designed to reduce manscaping accidents, a 90-minute battery, and it's water-resistant with an LED light to illuminate grooming areas for the most precise trim. It's all premium, the design, the feel, the packaging. It comes looking nice. I've seen it myself, I've used it myself, and it makes certain other areas look nice as well. Support the podcast, and your balls will thank you. No, not your footballs, but you can get 20% off and free shipping by using our code UTDWeeklyPod, P-O-D at the end there, at manscaped.com. That's UTDWeeklyPod, P-O-D there, when you get to the checkout. By using that code, you'll be supporting the podcast to keep putting out the content that we do. UTDWeeklyPod, use it at manscaped.com. Back to the show. Sorry for the interruption. And I think I need to go and pick up my dog's poo. The other point about Sancho is not just that he's a great player, but also we mentioned this on the last episode. If United were to, we were saying that if United were to kind of have another small decline now, then you'd kind of expect the best players to leave again in a couple of years when we don't qualify for the Champions League, say, in a couple of years' time. But Sancho coming does show some ambition and some ambition to win trophies, to win the league, to win the Champions League, etc. So then you're thinking that's another factor. Is bringing Jadon Sancho is a sign to players like Martial, Rashford, Pogba, whoever, even Mason Greenwood, that United is a good place to be at for the next few years. And that's just come to head. There's so many factors in this. And the transfer window.
That was why we were saying that, you know, finishing top four, despite the sort of stigma around celebrating finishing in the top four, it was so important, not just for this season, but for our long-term future. You know, there were reports that we were not going to pursue Jadon Sancho if we didn't get in the Champions League because of the extra money that we get from that. And it helps us attract so many better players, which is then huge for just keeping the players that we have now. You know, do you really think, like you said, the likes of Martial, Rashford, Bruno Fernandes, Paul Pogba would want to spend the prime years of their career in a team fighting for the Europa League? We might not be in with a chance of winning the Champions League, but being in it, the symbolic nature of it is huge, and that symbolism also transfers over to kind of players that we can sign and the kind of players that we can keep too.
Yeah, so Dortmund won that Sancho deal done by August the 10th. That's not going to happen. But the transfer window officially ends on October the 5th. So there'll be, I think, about 3 weeks of Premier League action and the other leagues start at the same time on September the 12th, I think. So about 3 weeks of action before the transfer window closes, like it used to be. A lot of time to focus on other players. Let's say United sign Sancho on the right wing for an enormous amount of money, and that leaves United without a huge budget for their remaining desires. If I go back to the start of the episode, you said the positions that United needed were right wing, so that would be Sancho, centre mid and centre back. If I ask now, and this is a question we got from Mark Dowd, he said, don't mention specific players, but argue the case for the one area that needs a signing more than any other and explain your rationale. So let's put Sancho to the side. Let's put right wing to the side. Answer Mark's question.
I think pretty easy for me, centre back. I mean, even throughout our good run of form, towards the end of the season, we still look continually shaky at the back. You know, every single game, even our best performances, you know, think of Bournemouth, Brighton, Villa, we still looked ragged at the back. Even at Sheffield United, actually, which is probably our most comfortable, even the first couple of minutes before Martial's first goal, you know, they were still coming at us and looked dangerous.
Yeah.
That, for me, is clearly our biggest priority. Honestly, potentially more so than right wing. I think right wing is only
I don't know.
Such a big deal because...
I'm not sure. I think centre-back's important, but there's no getting away from the fact that United have one of the best defensive records in Europe. And as shaky as we might look, we didn't concede against Sheffield United. We didn't concede against all these teams. We kept quite a few clean sheets, and were it not for a string of mistakes from David De Gea, not only might we have more points in the Premier League, but we might also have got through in the FA Cup as well.
So, I mean, that's fair, but we also had a right winger in Mason Greenwood who scored 10 goals at the end of the season.
Yeah.
So if you want to use the argument of how many clean sheets we kept as a reason why we don't need a centre-back, I could use the same one to say that's why we don't need a right wing.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's fair, but look, defences are rotated much less than forward lines, and I think that's always the case. United massively overplayed their front five in the lockdown period. It was a necessity, but they did it. Going into next season, when United will have a game probably on average every 4 days throughout the whole season without any kind of breaks because of how rushed the season's going to be, that rotation is massively needed. I just think, and we said it, United haven't had a proper right winger for so long. Ideally, you'd have a world-class starting right winger, whether it's Sancho or some other mythical character. Then you've got Rashford on the left, that is his position. Martial is the starting striker. But by the end of the season, it wouldn't surprise me if Mason Greenwood is United's starting number nine. And then you've got a great situation where you've got four good starting forwards for a front three. And that should be the minimum. Really, you're wanting five great players for your front three. And that should be the minimum, because United don't have the chance to rest players in the Europa League next season because they're playing in the Champions League. So it won't be like this season where you play Mason Greenwood, Heath Chong, Dan James in on Thursday nights, because you'll have to be playing a great front three on Wednesday night or Tuesday night as well as on Saturday afternoon.
No, that's all fair. And we've spoken about how terrible our depth is in our front line is very, very poor. But I mean, centre back for me is arguably as important, if not more important, because sure, we don't have great depth at centre back either, but we don't have a great starting lineup at centre back.
Yeah,
you know, Maguire and Lindelof are good. You know, I'm not going to sit here and say that they're terrible, but they're not an amazing partnership. We've seen that a lot of times, and you know, it's all well and good getting some more depth up front. And please I'm saying we shouldn't sign Sancho. We should, but I just think centre-back needs to be a big priority because I don't think that we are good enough defensively to go and win a title. I know that we didn't concede many goals this season, but I mean, I don't think anyone will say that watching us defensively inspired much confidence at all.
Yeah, the problem I have is that in this summer when we don't know how much money United have. Now, look, they could surprise us all and come out and spend 250 million quid, but that seems very, very unlikely. The centre-back that United need is not another Victor Lindelof or Eric Bailly or Phil Jones or Marcus Rojo. And to get a centre-back like that, and there are very few of them out there, and Koulibaly is probably the only one. There's some who are going to be upgrades on Victor Lindelof, but they're probably not enough of an upgrade to justify spending 50, 60, 70 million. And that's my problem. And there's a similar... I have a similar problem with signing a centre mid, which I think is actually a massive priority as well. I don't think there's any point United signing a midfielder unless they're on a level with Bruno Fernandes and Paul Pogba and will upgrade the midfield to that extent. So I think this summer it's probably out of the question because of Sancho. And I think United will have to rely on McTominay, Matic and Fred for that third position in midfield and to rotate with Fernandes and Pogba. And I think that's fair enough for now. But if United were saying, right, we're going to win the league next season, no doubt about it, we're going for the league title next season, then that midfield wouldn't be fine. I don't think United can win a league with the quality of midfield depth that we have now. So I think we need another third brilliant midfielder. And then those can be rotating options. There is the one player, when I was making notes for this podcast, the one player I thought could be a good signing is Mark Rocca at Espanyol. He has a 40 million euro release clause, but Espanyol have just been relegated and they will almost certainly accept less, something like 20 million euros, 25 million euros, which is a bargain for... a 23-year-old, really talented Spanish midfielder. He has got a lot of interest from elsewhere, which could drive the price a bit higher. I think Arsenal, Everton, AC Milan, Atletico Madrid, lots of clubs have been linked. Who knows who are actually interested? United haven't been linked at all. But he's a good player. I've watched a few times this season. Not a dribbler, but a great passer, good vision. He's got the tempo to his game that we've talked about with Bruno Fernandes so much that United need midfield passing at speed. He's decent defensively. He's not the ideal replacement for that Matic figure in midfield. But he could slot into that role in certain easier games, and then he could fill in for Pogba in others. So he's different to both Matic and Pogba, but you could kind of replace either of them in certain games, if that makes sense. He'd be a really interesting signing, I think, and not too expensive. But United scouts are paid, well, I was going to say very good money. They're not actually paid that much. Scouts as an industry are very much underpaid for the work they do. But United's recruitment department are paid good money to do this. So I'm not going to tell them who to sign. But he'd be an interesting one. But midfield, another winger on loan for cheap. I mean, Kingsley Coman on loan would be nice, but unlikely. I think there's all of these, but it all comes down to that thing is, if United sign Sancho, there isn't much space left.
No, there isn't. And this is exactly what we're saying. I think, you know, kind of going back to Mark's question about talking about positions without specific players, I think there's an argument to be made about centre-back versus right wing. But if we include specific players, I think the link to Jadon Sancho is so strong that he has to be the priority because
there isn't really
any centre-back that it seems like we are specifically linked to. I think, you know, if it wasn't for such the strong links to Sancho and the very clear need for him and the way that he would fit in our team, maybe we could prioritise centre-back. But I think Sancho has to be, as an individual, has to be the one that we go for. And then after that, it really just comes down to, you know, how much money we have left. Yeah. Because as we've said, we simply don't know. And it wouldn't surprise me if we only had sort of 20, 30 million left. I think United are in this weird spot at the moment where I don't think really many, probably other than right wing, we don't really have that, because I would say Greenwood isn't a natural right winger.
Yeah.
There aren't really that many positions where I would say our starting player is bad. you know, in the past, we've had sort of glaring holes at many positions. You think of right back at the end of last season.
Valencia, Ashley Young, all of the, yeah.
Yeah, but we're in this weird spot where we have a lot of starters who are good, but probably not good enough to win a title with or world class.
Yeah.
And so then it's difficult because to really get anywhere to progress, you need to be spending upwards of £60 million on a player, as we're seeing with Sancho. But then it's, can you afford more than one of those every summer? It's a tough thing to be able to do.
Yeah.
And you know, spending 20, 30 million on a player is good, and there's a chance they'll improve, but they probably won't end up being sort of a world-class talent. And that is kind of what we need at the moment.
Yeah, and Liverpool got there by spent big on two players, Van Dijk and Alisson, in their two major weakness areas. And they spent kind of average amounts on Salah, Mane, Firmino, Henderson was an old signing. All of these players were kind of, they spent big on two players, where City did what it seems like United have to do and bought two big players kind of every summer at every opportunity. They spent a load of money on fullbacks, a load of money on centre-backs. And even when they were winning titles, they spent more on midfielders, on wingers, on attackers. They seem to have about eight brilliant attacking midfielders at one point. And United are in this weird, really weird position where, because we finished top four, it feels for me like I don't think we're anywhere near good enough to mount a title challenge next season. I think we're really far off in terms of squad depth, in terms of the starting 11 not being as good as Liverpool or City's yet, let alone the squad. And yet, because we finished top four, and because you've got this possibility of Jadon Sancho coming in, and look, he might not, it could all be proved wrong. But because of all of that, you're thinking United are going for the title, but they're not good enough to go for the title. So I think, in a way, you've got to treat next season as you sign Sancho, that's one big signing. You make sure you finish third, maybe push for second, but it seems unlikely. And I think third would be, I mean, it's frustrating to say, but third would probably be the best United can get next year. You go for that, and then next year you bring in another world-class midfielder, another world-class centre-back, whichever one you feel you need at the end of that season. So it's just this weird kind of situation of thoughts where United are both going for the title and not going for the title.
Yeah, we are. It is just a strange sort of gap that we're in. You know, we are still a long way off of Liverpool and City, and you're right in that I don't think we will get that close to them next season. I don't see us as genuine title challengers. I think our squad needs another couple of years to mature, because we have a lot of young players in our squad. You know, we had the youngest average age of the starting lineup in the Premier League last season, which is significant and important. So we will get better.
Yeah.
So we either need another couple of years, or we need to be spending £300-400 million, which is obviously not going to happen.
Yeah.
I think for United, the aim has to be to retain third, and that won't be easy, to be fair, with the signings that Chelsea have made up front, if they all come together.
Yeah.
And I think it's to get closer to Liverpool and City. That is the aim. That the one good thing about how good Liverpool and City have been in the last couple of years is that they can't get much better. You know, it's not as if they were winning the title with 85 points and then could add another 10 or 15. You know, Liverpool, they ended up on 100 points, I think, didn't they? So they can't really get much better. That is our aim. We're never going to get 100 points, but rather than finishing, what did we end up, like 34 points, 35 points off of Liverpool?
I never checked. I didn't want to think about it.
Well, I think we ended up on like 65, something like that. So
66 we ended on, yeah. And I think we were 66, they were 99.
Oh, they got 99, yeah. Okay, so 33 points difference. So the aim for us should be, you know, let's get that gap down to sort of 10, 15, and then go again and make that same leap again in the following year. Obviously,
yeah,
we want to go into season going for the title, but I think we have to be realistic. This is not a squad that in one summer can go from earning 66 points to 99. It's just not feasible.
Yeah, I agree. But it's a strange one, but you feel like if you were at United now, you're saying we should be winning the title in the 21-22 season. And that should be the aim, and the requirement is winning the title in not next season, but the season after. And I think
a trophy of some kind next season would be massive as well.
Yeah, I said this last time. Any season without a trophy is instantly forgettable. And no matter if you finish second, if you lose in the final or whatever, you look back in 10 years and you just think, what year was that? And United need to win the Europa League this year, and next year they need to win one of the FA Cup, League Cup, Champions League is very unlikely, but they have to win a trophy, and get much, much closer to the title. Any final thoughts?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just I'm both anxious and excited for what the transfer window might bring. It's going to be a transfer window like no other. And honestly, who knows what every team is going to look like come, was it October the 5th?
Right, it's time for an update on the academy team. So they are back training, but they still don't know what level they'll be playing at next year. So United's under-23s team was second in Division 2 of their Premier League 2 season when the season stopped. They did have a game in hand, so they don't know if they'll be promoted or not and are desperately trying to find out and plan their season. They also don't know yet when youth football can resume. Hopefully there'll be some clarity on that within the next week. United enjoyed some success at the Premier League Academy Awards this week. Marcus Rashford was given the 2019-20 Academy Graduate Award for his work on and off the pitch. James Garner won Premier League 2 Goal of the Season. He scored 8 goals in 10 appearances, but the award was for his first, a screamer against West Brom. You can watch that on the Academy Man UTD Twitter. The most important award of the night, though, was for Tony Whelan, the Academy Programme Advisor. Whelan is an Academy graduate himself and has worked at the club since the early 90s. He was an Academy graduate in the 60s and then went to play in the US, and I think he played against Pele there in the early 70s. He was given the Eamon Dolan Award for exceptional contribution to coaching. I'd really recommend going and reading his interview with the club website. Just look up Tony Whelan at Manchester United and it will come up. He really is an incredible individual and has been at the heart of United's Academy for 3 decades now. Every player that comes through that, Rashford, Greenwood, Lingard, McTominay, Pogba, whoever, every player that comes through has in part to thank Tony Whelan for that. Now, who could go out on loan this season? There's a few, and maybe we'll review this when we get into the start of September, but I think the main one is going to be James Garner. He could go to Swansea, where Steve Cooper, former manager of England's under-17 team, he's now in charge of Swansea. Garner's been linked with loads of other clubs, but I think he'll be going on loan to some kind of championship club. Swansea are probably the favourites at the moment. Ted Edmengi is another one. This is very much a could. I think it's unlikely, to be honest, that he'll go on loan. More likely is another season at the heart of the under-23s and then reassess next year, depending on whether he's had any first-team chances and how his development's going. But Matej Kovar, the under-23s goalkeeper, he's too good for that level now. He will go out on loan this year. I'm 99% certain. Not sure to what level. I think as high as he can get probably, but I think that will probably be League One or League Two. When Dean Henderson first went out on loan, it's difficult for goalkeepers. He first went out to Grimsby Town in League Two. He actually won Dean Henderson Sheffield United Young Player of the Year award recently. Those are three interesting ones to look out in terms of loan moves. You'd also maybe Dylan Levitt could go out on loan. Same for Ethan Galbraith in that under-23s midfield. Ethan Laird is another one. If he's not going to get chances at United, then he'll go out on loan. But I think he'll stay and be given chances by Solskjaer next year, especially with Diogo Dalot, I think, expecting to leave the club. And there's a few other potential ones. We will revisit this before September. But I think Kovar and Garner are the two certs to go out on loan for United this year. Right, we're not really going to preview the game against Lask because basically United just need to not lose 6-0. The team I would go for actually would be Matej Kovar, who I just mentioned, Ethan Laird, Mengi, Fish, Williams at the back, and then Garner, Levitt and McTominay in midfield. And then Chong, Greenwood and Damani Melo, maybe Odinogalo up front. So basically the under-23s, just have it out, let them play and try and win at Old Trafford against good opposition. Maybe stick a couple of more senior players in there. The team I said had Williams and McTominay in it and possibly Igalo or Damani Melo, but you could do a couple more. But definitely have a vast majority. It should be like the away game in Kazakhstan when United did lose, but got some great experience for players like Deshaun Bernard, Ted Edmengi and many others. We will be back very soon. The Europa League games will hopefully be coming thick and fast. United should avoid, you would think, 6-0 or 7-1 defeat by Lask and thus should progress into the Europa League quarterfinals, where we will either play against Copenhagen or the newly crowned Turkish champions, Istanbul Basaksehir. The latter are leading 1-0 in their tie so far. This is the furthest they've ever got in the competition, but incredibly, they've never won a home leg in a UEFA competition tie. So we'll see how that goes, but I expect United will be playing the Istanbul side. Remember, this episode was brought to you by Manscaped. To get 20% off and free shipping on their products, just use the code UTDWeeklyPod. That's P-O-D at the end there. Use that code at the checkout. Please do. Your balls will thank you, and it helps the podcast to continue giving you the content that you seem to be enjoying if you're listening this far. We'll be back with a 10-minute review of the last game after that, and then 15-minute reviews of all the Europa League games after that. We'll also discuss any transfer news that comes our way in the meantime. Once the Europa League is finished, I'll be bringing you a special episode on the making of Mason Greenwood. I've spoken to the people who know him well and who have watched him play since he was a kid. It'll be here on the Manchester United Weekly Podcast once we've won or gone out of the Europa League. Remember, if you want to support the podcast, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or go buy something with our code UTDWeeklyPod on Manscaped. Thanks as always for listening. Have a great week. Goodbye.
Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.